Welcome to issue 7 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast where our mutant gene is the ability to be very still. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other host, David McVeigh.
And we're joined today by a very special guest, Cameron Williams. How are you, Cam?
Hey, I'm good, guys. What's going on?
Wait a minute, Richard. A guest? You never told me about this.
I know. We left the back door open again, David.
God damn it. You leave the back door open. Look what crawls in. Cam, how are you?
I am good, guys. I have to say, as a huge fan of Behind the Panels, it is an absolute honor to join you guys on this week's, I guess I say issue. Is that correct?
That's
I'm getting
correct.
The terminology correct?
That's correct.
You're an old pro now.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, so thanks for having me, guys. I can't wait to geek out with you guys over comics.
Fantastic. Now, Cam, the reason you're joining us is because I believe you are a Walking Dead expert or an expert, a huge fan of Walking Dead.
Yeah, I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. Only recently have gone into the comic, but I've just been devouring like nothing else and getting into as much of it as I possibly can. So I'm ready to dive into the Walking Dead with you guys today because it's just one of the greatest comics that's come around in the last couple of years. So yeah, looking forward to the chat.
I concur completely. We'll come back to that a little bit later in the pick of the week. What do you reckon, Richard?
Yeah, it sounds reasonable.
Cool. All right. So, Richard, we like to start the show by doing what? It's been so long. It's been a whole week. I've forgotten what to do.
We start with a traditional prayer, David.
I thank the Lords of DC and Marvel.
I've got that other show that I do that you don't know about. We'd like to start off with talking about what we've been reading.
And
I think we should...
That's right. We read things, don't we?
I don't know. Well, obviously, in my other group, I read the Bible.
You're out of my studio if you keep talking like
that.
I'm not
in your studio, David. I'm Skyping in.
Oh, I forgot. You're virtual.
I'm not real. I'm a figment. I'm in your mind.
You're the Max Headroom of the Behind the Panel scene.
Oh, possibly. Sorry. Welcome back to Behind the Bible, where we expose... Oh, look, I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so, well, what have I been reading? Well, apart from this week's pick of the week, which is, of course, The Walking Dead, I've been steadily marching through The Ultimates Volume 2. I'm a huge fan of that.
Right.
Although I've got to admit, it's been a crazy, crazy week for movies. Did I mention that in the last week we met Simon Pegg?
I believe we have talked about that at some point, but...
I think we talked about that on the film show, David.
I think we did, and it was very exciting.
Mm. So that involved a lot of excitement. I think that's my big bit of comic geekery for the week. I met Simon Pegg, and we also spoke to the director of Mission Impossible, Brad Bird, who's got a big animation background there too. So
and he was really interesting. He was very giving as well. I liked him.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big movie week, but I've just sort of been plowing through The Walking Dead, which I'm loving. I actually went above and beyond the reading assignment and kept on plowing through. So I've been enjoying it a lot.
Good for you. I also went a little bit further as well. I've read it all before, as I've said, but I went back and reread the issues 1 to 8 that we talked about and then kind of kept going. I think I'm actually up to about issue 15.
Yeah, I'm a little bit behind you. I think we're about 11 or 12, but still it's a wonderful series, but we'll talk about that more.
No problem. Cameron, what have you been reading this week?
Look, just devouring as much of the DC New 52 as I possibly can. So just the last week in books, you know, just a lot of the solo stuff, pretty much all of it, like, you know, Wonder Woman, Flash, Superman, all of it, pretty much as much of the DC New 52 as I possibly can. But I haven't forgotten about Marvel. I'm checking out the new Ultimates that they're doing.
This is Volume 5, yeah?
Yeah. I'm checking that out at the moment, which is pretty good. I'm checking out the new Ultimate Spider-Man, which has been great so far.
I haven't read any of the new ones yet. This is with the new Peter, the new Spider-Man, yeah?
Yeah. So basically, in this timeline, obviously Spider-Man is dead.
Spoilers! No, I'm joking.
I think we've mentioned that huge story arc called The Death of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one of the biggest events recently, but it basically continues on from that timeline, and it kind of deals with you know, an African American kid kind of getting spider powers, and it hasn't really kind of launched into being kind of a Spider-Man book yet. Like they're still doing a lot of origin stuff and a lot of character stuff at the moment, but that's what's making it really good at the moment. They're not kind of going for those cheap, you know, gimmicks. It's been really, really good so far. And just to add even more Spider-Man into the mix, something that's just a hell of a lot of fun. Recently I checked out Avenging Spider-Man, which looks to be just like a book that's just about old school Spidey fun teaming up with all the different superheroes. So yeah, that's what's been keeping me busy lately.
Cool.
Very cool.
I haven't read it. I haven't read the new Ultimate Spider-Man's or Avenging Spider-Man, so I'm feeling very left out. But what I did read this week was Kevin Smith's follow-up to Cacophony, which is The Widening Gyre, Batman The Widening Gyre, issues 1 to 6. Now, Richard, you told me it was proposed to be... Oh, hello! Whoa, my soundboard has a life of its own.
I told you that we're having a carnival, David.
Wow, what the hell was that all about? Anyway, I apologize. Now, you told me it was a proposed 12-issue arc that he only did the first half of so far.
Well, my understanding is he's going to do it. He always intended to do it in two parts. It's going to be a 12-issue arc, and I think Kevin Smith has finally recognized his own problems with keeping to a schedule, particularly a 12-month schedule. So he's decided, I'm going to do the first six, take a break, go off and do some other stuff, and then I'll come back and do the other six. So he's kind of like, he's doing that with his next film as well. He's doing that in two parts.
That's
so true.
Well, I'm sitting at the point where I started to read it, and I loved Cacophony a lot. We talked about it on the show, obviously, and I love Cacophony a lot. And when I started reading Widening Gyre, I thought, well, this is kind of a different flavor. You know, it's kind of, it's almost like a romance novel, really, because the entire book, the six issues, is about Bruce Wayne kind of coming to terms with the fact that he is falling in love with this woman, and you know, maybe he can take a step back from Gotham, and there's another new hero in Gotham who he's thinking might be able to take his mantle, and you know, there's all this stuff going on for six issues, and I'm thinking it's an interesting read, and it's very well written, and but you know, it's not real Batman stuff. It's like inside the head of Bruce Wayne. And I'm reading it going, this is kind of interesting, and it's all very good, and blah, blah, blah. And let me tell you, when I hit issue six, the last page, so the last three panels or something like that, just made me, like, you know, drop everything I was doing and just kind of went, holy hell! And leaves you on such a cliffhanger and completely made the entire six issues absolute must-read. You know, you must read this series. It's I cannot wait for the next six. Come on, Kevin Smith, get off your butt.
And I'm a little hesitant to read them for that very reason, because if I get to the six and I really want to see the six, there's a good chance that number seven may never turn up. So I'm going to wait until that's out in the shops.
Oh, don't do that to me. I need to talk to you about this. I need to talk to somebody about this. But yeah, look, when all 12 are out, we'll do it as our book club. We'll do it as the reading for this week, for this show, because I don't want to do half of it.
No.
But when all 12 have come out, I think we'll definitely make that a week's pick, because it is I tell you what, if the next six follow on directly from those last few panels, wow, we're in for a ride. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But that was really good. The other thing I've started to read, now I've got to get his name. Give me one second here. I forgot to pull up his name. But I've started to read Joker, which is a graphic novel. Written by
Brian
the guy,
Azzarello.
But that's his name, Azzarello. Thank you, Brian Azzarello, who is the man who has written the new graphic novel for this.
No,
Christmas.
Wait, it's not Brian Azzarello.
Yeah, Brian Azzarello. That's his
is
name.
Is it? Okay,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, Brian Azzarello. Art by Lee Bermeo.
Right.
And it is a graphic novel, literally about Joker, and it starts with him getting out of Arkham. Somehow he's literally been not escaped, literally being released from Arkham. He's managed to get himself out. And it's all about, from what I've read so far, I've only read the first 10, 15 pages so far, it's about him coming out and having to rebuild his empire. And kind of looking at all the people who were supposed to be looking after it for him and kind of putting it all back together again. And the artwork is amazing. It's actually, drawn, Joker is actually drawn in the style of Heath Ledger from The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And so it's really dark and sinister, and it's a really good read so far, and I'm really looking forward to continuing on and finishing it, and it gives me a lot of hope for Batman Noel, which is going to be our Christmas book on the show in a couple weeks. So yeah, I am looking forward to that a lot. So Joker is one worth having a look at so far, what I've read.
Intend to read that one.
But Batman Widening Gyre, guys, you've got to read this. I need to talk. I need to purge.
Also, to throw something into the mix with the Joker book, there's a really good interpretation of, I think Riddler shows up in that book at some point. And I think if they were ever to do the Riddler justice in the kind of Nolan Bat universe, like in, you know, on the big screen, that is the way it should be done in the Joker book. I have to say, after I read that Joker it fits in with that universe so nicely that you like you can't help but see these other villains such as Riddler and Killer Croc and a couple of other guys show up. It's amazing what they do, like, and make them real and fit into the world. It's a really good read.
I was about to say when you were saying that, Killer Croc is actually a major player in the first part of the book. And the way he's drawn, you could imagine somebody like Michael Clark Duncan playing him with mottled skin. He doesn't look like a croc. He looks like just a huge man with really bad skin, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really well done. It kind of takes Joker, because he's got the Heath Ledger look with the scars on his face and, you know, more human looking rather than the huge mouth and everything else that Joker's always drawn as, you can kind of see that this is really inspired by the whole Nolan world. It's really good. It's really well done. And Richard, you need to grab hold of it.
Yes, sir.
You got some reading ahead of you, son.
It's a good thing Christmas is coming up and I have some time off.
Absolutely. All right, what do you reckon we do get into some comic news?
Let's do some comic. I don't think we have a theme for comic news,
yeah,
do we?
Yeah, we do.
Oh. What a scoop!
There you go.
I should have known because I made the theme.
You made it. That's right.
Yeah. So just edit out that bit where I say, I don't think we've got a theme.
I'm going to leave it all in there for you.
They're going to hear me saying that now too. So moving swiftly along into comic news.
Yep.
Look, we've been fairly DC heavy over the last few issues, so I thought there'd be a bit of a good time to do a bit of Marvel news. And look, this week, it's two big bombs in the Marvel universe. The first is that Brian Michael Bendis, the Geoff Johns of the Marvel U,
pretty much,
is leaving the Avengers.
This is kind of sad news, really.
Mm-hmm.
So what's his reasoning?
He says he's going to wrap up the Avengers and New Avengers at the same time the first storyline of Avengers Assemble will be done. It's a good time to move on to other things. Before I go, though, I'm ending things big. I'm in count zone mode, and you know when you're watching a show like Breaking Bad and every episode feels like the second to last episode? That's where I'm at. I've been on the Avengers longer than anybody in the history of the book. But when you take everything into account, I've written over 200 issues. I'm very, very proud of that. And what we have coming up this summer gives me an opportunity to go out on a high note. I know enough about show business to know that it's a great time to go. So, when he's worked on that many issues in one go, I'm not surprised he's moved on. I mean, he did the same thing on Ultimate Spider-Man. I think he worked on over 100 issues with that before he moved on. Now,
look, I think the man's
Cameron,
paid his dues.
You're reading the new Ultimate Spider-Man. He's not writing that, is he?
I'm not too sure. I don't think he is. I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but I'm not sure of his involvement with that one, but it suggests that maybe if he is working on it, that's probably why he's leaving the Avengers. But it sounds like he's just a bit bored after doing so many issues.
I think it's a situation where he's paid his dues. I mean, come on, the man has driven the Avengers for a long time. He's creatively probably wants to do other stuff.
To be honest, the Avengers is kind of heading towards, with the film coming out next year, it's going to be very hard to, like, do the characters because the world's going to become familiar with the big screen versions because, you know, that's the jump on point for most people. So, maybe he's just getting out before it kind of just goes nuts and people just want to see, you know, Hawkeye join as Jeremy Renner and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
That's already starting to happen. Have you noticed in the Ultimates Volume 5, Thor is looking a lot like Chris Hemsworth nowadays.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to jump in. Bendis is still writing Ultimate Spider-Man. So
there you go.
Cool. He's been writing that for, I guess it's 3,000 issues now.
3,000 issues.
That's just a rough estimate on my part.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Yeah, well, I think he's been writing for at least 150 years. So, you know.
Yeah. No, that's he's gotten in Nicolas Cage's Time Machine.
Yep.
And gone back and learned his vampiric wisdom.
I am looking at this picture of him on the article, and he is looking fairly vampiric.
Yeah, he is looking a little. Yes, no, he is. He's very pale, and he's got that kind of nice wall behind him. So I think he's. I thought he is wearing one of those bags that you sling over your shoulder.
Yeah, that's true. He is looking a little.
He looks like a courier, like an aging. If Lex Luthor got a job as a courier.
There you go.
That's Brian Michael Bendis.
He might be on his way to the airport to go and visit Alan Moore over in his little shack. You know?
Don't make me do my Alan Moore impersonation.
No, don't do that. All right, moving swiftly along.
Okay, story number two is also Avengers related. Marvel this week announced its big, and I mean big, plans for 2012. They're doing, let's just say Avengers versus X-Men.
Kind of saw this one coming for a while, actually.
Yeah, but it's their landmark 12-issue pop culture event, is how the press describes it.
Let's reword that. That's another one of their landmark events.
Landmark 12-issue pop cultural events. It says, you know, two most popular franchises in comics history go to war. And this is coming out in April 2012. It's going to be written by... Brian Bendis. Michael Bendis, yeah. Jason Aaron, Jonathan Hickman, Ed Brubaker, and Matt Fraction. And the art is going to be done by a couple of fairly obscure people like John Romita Jr., Oliver Kopai, and Adam Kubert.
Can I just point out that John Romita Jr. is kind of like the Brian Michael Bendis of the art world?
Yes. it says here the Avengers and X-Men have learned that an all-powerful embodiment... Again, we say... If you want to avoid all spoilers,
don't listen to us.
Don't listen to the show. Listen to the show. We want you to listen to the show. Just I don't know how. Work out your own way to deal with spoilers.
It's a news article. There's no way you're going to... I mean, we're not spoiling it. They've already spoiled it.
Richard, people love spoilers now. Movie websites and comic websites run on spoilers now.
That's cool. True. You know, I'm convinced there are movies that are being smuggled out 2 minutes at a time. I think Simon Pegg actually said the other day, don't mention me, but Simon Pegg. Oh, yeah. Simon Pegg actually said the other day on his Twitter account that he said, I'm convinced they're trying to smuggle Mission Impossible minute by minute into the public domain. Because he said, I've just seen another 8 clips released. You know?
Not even being smuggled out. I mean, Paramount just sent out 4 more clips.
You know, my favorite public.
Sorry, Cam, go.
You know, my favorite publicity exercise is 57 new images available for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Who wants 47 images?
There's someone out there who's like a really, 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 really big fan of Tom Cruise because he's probably in all of them.
Probably.
Is there a single... I wonder how many of those 47 images don't have Tom Cruise in them.
All right, let's get back to this article for a minute because I got a couple things to say about this. All right,
what was I up to?
Don't worry about it. I'm gonna throw in my two bits here.
Anyway, it's something about Phoenix Force crash landing on Earth, Marvel Universe, X-Men.
Wait a minute, is Phoenix back again? I can't keep up with how many times she's died. All right,
I'm just gonna read this line. The Avengers before the spoiler bit was the Avengers and the X-Men have learned that an all-powerful embodiment of both death and rebirth, known as the Phoenix Force, is on a crash course for Earth. And it needs a new host to unleash its immeasurable power. But what is shocking decision that tied to the Phoenix return that will pit the Avengers against the X-Men? And when good friends become bitter enemies, what does this mean for the future of the Marvel Universe?
It means it's a repeat of Civil War. which I think is exactly the same tagline they used on Civil War, with friends pitted against enemies. But, you know, I don't know where you stand on this, Cam. I am an Avenger. I am a Marvel fan. But I really love Civil War, their event from a couple of years ago. I really like Siege because it was a good conclusion to Civil War. But I was really underwhelmed by Fear Itself. And I actually liked it when I first started reading it, and I thought the ending just kind of pissed itself away, really. It was just really not inspiring at all. And I just look at this and I go, I don't know if I can take another Marvel event. They're doing them so fast now that I just don't know if I can do it again.
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating. I mean, the comic book world, it's just event after event after event. I mean, DC, we've just endured Flashpoint and now the reboot, which is only 50% reboot. I think they're just grasping at straws with their ideas. But I just don't know why they just have to keep, you know, slamming us with events. Just, you know, just like great stories and great writers and great artists work on things. Don't, you know, just suddenly go, okay, today we're going to put two of our biggest franchises kind of up against each other in the hopes that more people are going to buy comics.
Well, I don't even mind if they want to do a big event where they say this is going to be a 12-issue miniseries and go back to the 80s when they did Secret Wars and Secret Wars 2. Mm. And you go, this was like 8 issues or 12 issues. And you sit there and you read that and it's done, right? nowadays these events are so many crossovers. I mean, quite literally, Civil War, if you read all the crossovers and read everything that goes in Civil War, it's 129 issues.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, I don't have time for 129 issues.
Or the money, for that matter.
Or the money. And if you just read the miniseries, it doesn't make sense because they keep referring to things that have happened outside of the miniseries. You have to read everything, otherwise it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think someone the other day said to me his biggest fear as a comic book reader, especially with the DC New 52, was he could just smell crossover event happening very, very soon, like where you have to buy more miniseries and more books to make sense of it all. Mm. And, you know, like I'm already breaking the bank buying my weekly comics at the moment, but any more and I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be selling the house, you know, double mortgaging, you know.
We've already started to see it. Flash has actually appeared in several of the other comics, including Captain Atom recently. And they've already started talking in the back pages of the new 52 that mm-hmm. there's going to be crossovers between Animal Man and Swamp Thing. So they're already starting to cross over into each other.
Yeah, I don't think the kids are going to be eating over the next couple of months.
There are two things that came out of this story. One of the comments I love at the top. I took the story from Superhero Hype, by the way.
Great
and
site.
The first comment on that is, I wonder which characters will die and then come back shortly afterwards.
Well, Phoenix, for one.
Yeah, well, there's Phoenix as well. But the other question that got raised a bit in there, and this is a valid point, who's Wolverine fighting for? Because he seems to be turning up in every team at the moment.
Well, he's actually a member of the Avengers and a member of the X-Men
Who's he going to side with? And I mean, this is the problem when you have these big crossover events is that clearly that a character like Wolverine is in virtually every team at the moment. He's turning up. He's got his own book. He's in the X-Men. Mm-hmm. There's a Wolverine Origins book going around. There's the Avengers stuff going around. All that stuff's happening. This kind of forces you to sort of pick a continuity and go forward with it. And you know, when DC do that, they kind of say, no, we're scrapping all continuity except for this one. This just seems to muddy the waters. And as you said, it seems to be an event for the sake of having an event. I don't buy it.
We're still kind of in Fear Itself. It hasn't finished yet because they're doing the secondary series and we've got these 7.1s that keep turning up and 7.2s. They're up to 7.3 now.
Well, this is not coming out till April next year. So yeah, I'm guessing there will be a mini event between now and then.
I'm just looking at this piece of artwork that they've got on the article. And it occurs to me that Wolverine is wearing an X on his shirt. But he's attacking Emma Frost, so I don't know whose side he's on. The Hulk is red, so I don't know.
I think he's just confused.
and Hawkeye looks just like Jeremy Renner.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Yeah, funny that.
So, can you imagine being a comic book artist and, like, you're working on a comic and, you know, you've been given, you know, your first gig doing, like, maybe Hawkeye and you draw it and you're doing your own interpretation and someone comes in and goes, you know what that drawing needs? It needs more Renner.
We all need a bit more Renner in our lives, don't we?
Yeah, a bit more Renner, and I think as of late, I think people need a bit more Gosling in their lives as well, I think.
Fair enough. Gosling. We can't have enough Gosling. All right, let's move on. We've got a little bit of... we've got another one of your bumpers, don't we? Here we go. Let's do this. Cool.
Secret, that's me.
How come I feel like I should do a line of cocaine after that intro for some reason?
Oh, dear. Knock yourself out.
Yes, I was actually I was actually stunned to find out that voice was Richard.
Wow.
I know. There's a side of Richard we didn't know about.
is there an opening in the Pet Shop Boys or what's going on?
Well, I'm going to say a rubber band was involved, and let's leave it at that.
Oh.
anyway, moving swiftly along to something manlier. Thor 2.
That's pretty manly.
The sequel to Thor. It's due out in 2013. They were chugging along pretty nicely, but they've just lost their director.
Yeah, and I like the fact that she's left citing creative differences.
Creative differences, yeah.
This is like irreconcilable differences when you get a divorce.
I mean? You don't actually have to mention what they are. You just have to say there's irreconcilable differences. Like Deadline broke this story, as they break everything. Patty Jenkins was signed on. She's, of course, the director who did the Oscar-winning Monster with Charlize Theron, mm-hmm. and she's also the AMC TV series The Killing. She's done the pilot episode, and I think been involved with that a bit. and you know they were set to film soon.
So they were going to shoot late September, apparently.
September, and it was due for 15th of November, 2013 release. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking that far away when you're talking about a giant blockbuster film like this. And now they're on the hunt for a new director.
Well, and the other thing is the Marvel films are also tightly integrated with each other. They're going to have to get this into production because they're going to need stuff from this for, they're going to need stuff from Avengers for this as well. So, I mean, that's the thing. Marvel has woven themselves into this so tightly knit, series of films that I think at this late stage of the game, it's kind of late to be losing a director at this point.
I wonder if they'll go straight back to... I mean, like Kenneth Branagh said, I don't think he's interested in doing a second one, but it's possible I'll offer it to him again just to say, look, I would
actually say if, you know, Marvel offers enough money, you know, they could win anybody over, but Marvel are cheap asses, and we know that. All the stories about their contracts and the fact that they basically pay scale. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. So, I mean, they have to be giving points to someone because, you know, no one had... It's someone like Sam Jackson.
Probably,
I can't imagine
probably
he'd be
Avi Arad. Well, Sam Jackson apparently signed a 9-picture deal, and he almost didn't do it because of the money they were offering him.
Yeah.
And he finally agreed because it was kind of like the scale of the production. But I don't think he's getting paid as much as we think he is. You know what I mean?
No.
And this is the thing. They almost lost Mickey Rourke, if you remember, when they were doing Iron Man 2. He basically scoffed at the money. They offered him like $900,000 or something to be in it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think Mickey Rourke is in a position to start turning things down. I mean, like, let's forget, it's not that long ago since that he was, you know, out of work, basically.
No, look, let's face it. Since Wrestler, he's calling his own shots now.
He's calling his own shots now, but he's one bad role away from...
He's one kill shot away. You remember the film Kill Shot? Did you see that?
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
So, do you guys think that... I think the real problem with Thor 2 will be that... finding a director is going to be so hard because at such late notice, all the ones they probably want to get are going to be booked up like 2-3 movies ahead. So it's going to be really hard to find someone. And I think Marvel's kind of thinking is they always go with first and second time directors. They usually go with people that are pretty new to the game. You know, I mean, Favreau had made a couple of kind of kiddie films before he did Iron Man, but Iron Man was like a big responsibility for a guy that was still kind of a little bit fresh.
Branagh had track record though.
Yeah, Branagh had track record, but it's going to be really interesting to see who they can pull out because I was thinking today, like, if they can't find anyone that's like kind of, you know, hip and cool to it, you know, that's going to be able to, you know, direct the kind of film they want, they're going to have to go for a director, I think, that's going to have to come out of retirement. And I was thinking today, how awesome would it be if they gave Richard Donner a call and said, mate, you want to come out of retirement and do another superhero film? Because, I will make the call now that I've got a feeling that if they can't find, like, you know, some up-and-coming film clip director that's ready to go, they're going to start calling guys that are just sitting at home. And I think... I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel announced that they're going to get a big-name director to do Thor 2 because, you know, I think they're going to have a really hard time trying to find someone, to be honest.
I got to tell you, Richard Donner may not be the one to call, though. Let's face it. I mean, Superman was exceptional. The Omen was fantastic. You look at his most recent films, though. Donner hasn't been on top form for some time. I mean, when you look at things like, what was that thing with the Crichton one he did, the Time one? What was that?
Timeline.
Yes, thank you very much. He hasn't been in top form for some time. I was actually just thinking, though, now that the whole Doctor Who fiasco has dropped away, you heard about this, didn't you, and this is movie news, but David Yates, the director of Harry Potter films, basically said he was going to do a reboot of Doctor Who for the big screen, and now... Stephen Moffat has basically come out and said, excuse me, he goes, if a Doctor Who movie is going to be made, it's going to be made by the BBC and it'll be pretty, it will have our Doctor in it and blah, 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 and basically kiboshed the entire story. All I'm thinking is David Yates is available and he's a damn good director and he knows how to handle that big epic scope. Put him in there. Let David Yates direct Thor 2. I'm behind that.
What about you, Richard? You got any theories like people you'd like to see direct Thor 2?
Look,
actually, what I really want is Branagh.
true.
I'd like to see Branagh because I think he handled the first one so well. And I think they'd be mad not to offer it to him again. And as you said, with enough money or with the right script or what have you, he'll probably do it. You know, I'm with you, Cam. I reckon that the real strength of a lot of these films has been with those first-time directors. And it's, you know, if they get someone who's a bit up and coming, a bit hungry, or has something very distinctive or visual in their first film, I haven't got a name of someone I'd pick right now, but like, you know, but even as you said, maybe even someone who's got an established career. I mean,
Nicholas Winding Refn.
Well, actually, I think
I'd go for that.
Vindic Refn, I think, would actually kind of fix. He's done Viking stuff before.
Yep. Yes.
He's done Valhalla Rising.
He just had to tone himself down, that's all.
He needs to tone himself down, but I think he's ready. I think Drive was the, as brutal as it was, he's ready for a big action film.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and there was a hammer in Drive, so I mean,
it was a hammer in Drive, worked out.
You know what? As long as they don't give Matthew Vaughn a call, because as much as I like Kick-Ass and X-Men First Class, I think it's time for him to not do another superhero film.
He needs to go back and do another mobster film.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Strong needs some work. You know, he hasn't played like a kind of Cockney gangster for a while now. So, I mean, Matthew Vaughn's got to call him up and go, "We're doing a gangster film."
Guy Ritchie, you could have the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, like, all right. Thor with
lock,
the
stock, and two smoking hammers. It'd be great.
I think you just got the gig to write the third Thor film, Richard.
Yeah,
I can see the poster already.
What are you doing? He took the jam out of my donut. Give you a hammer, I will take you back to Valhalla. Sort this whole thing out. You get in the van.
Yeah. Oh, good lord, we're running over. Richard, move on.
Okay, quickly. One more story this week, and it's sort of still going with all over the place, and there's still more stuff coming out. Dark Knight Rises viral campaign started it.
Oh, okay. Woo-hoo! Okay. Now, what has been exposed this time?
There's a guy, apparently. Who is Dr. Leonard Pavel? Is what we want to know.
Who is Dr. Leonard Pavel? I don't know. Is this a joke?
No. Two doctors walk into a bar.
It's just thinking the same thing.
This,
there's a pope, a bishop,
Wired
and a rabbi.
Magazine. What was that, Dan?
There's a pope and a bishop and a rabbi.
Well, Wired magazine and Empire magazine released two images this week, both of them which were, quote-unquote, leaked by Warner.
Right.
And the first one featured a picture, a mugshot of actor Alon Abutbol. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And it was like CIA, Central Intelligence Bulletin, confidential notes about the doctor saying he disappeared on, and you know, there's all this information blacked out.
Yep, I can see that.
To a Russian nuclear facility, yada, yada, yada. Came out to attention 3 years ago and all this stuff. Anyway, and then there's a transcript of the doctor and why we need him and what, you know, why we need to get him, and it's basically somebody paying off some militia to go and get this doctor for us. And a lot of people have speculated it's a doctor that has something to do with Bane.
Right.
That they need him because, as we've talked about before, Bane's under fairly heavy medication constantly.
With the mask and everything. Yeah. No, look, it's interesting. And this is exactly what they did when The Dark Knight came out. They leaked all this stuff in advance, and it got everybody speculating. And at the end of the day, is it going to be relevant to the film?
It may not be, but it is creating a lot of buzz. And they've, a few critics have already seen the prequel footage this week.
Yep.
And it comes out next week in most cinemas around the world. By the time you listen to this, it will be about 2 or 3 days away from the IMAX footage being screened widely around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also another little bit came out this morning, I believe. There's a part of that same viral event, Operation Early Bird, has been initiated. And by the time you listen to this, Operation Early Bird will have been initiated, because it's going to be tomorrow morning at the time that we're recording this.
Right.
If you go to the Twitter feed, The Fire Rises is the Twitter handle. You might be able to find out a little bit more information about that.
This is going to be like Cloverfield all over again. The geeks are going to be scouring the net now for the next, 5 months?
Yep.
Just looking for every little missing thing that they can find.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, but I don't think any viral campaign could be any better than the Muppets. So challenge, gauntlet thrown down this year.
Absolutely. Look, I'm of the mind where I say I'm going to let everybody else do the footwork, and then it'll all just get exposed on the web, and I'll be able to read it.
Yeah,
I'll be able to read it all in one go.
I'm looking forward to seeing the movie in May next year. So.
Absolutely. Cam, are you looking forward to Dark Knight Rises?
I just cannot wait for The Dark Knight Rises. I mean, with most of these viral campaigns, It usually results in some kind of, you know, trailer or, you know, image being released. I mean, we saw it earlier in the year with the Twitter campaign, and they did, you know, they released the image of Bane. I mean, we've seen Catwoman, we've seen Bane, you know, via all the bloody set spoilers. We've seen the, you know, the flying, you know, Batmobile that they've got this time around. I'm thinking the only thing left for them to reveal is the story trailer, basically, that's going to give away a bit more story. But I can't wait for The Dark Knight Rises. It's so exciting. In fact, my goal is to go to Comic-Con next year, and Comic-Con kind of coincides with The Dark Knight Rises coming out in America. It's around the same time. So
it'll be insane.
I'm kind of looking forward to going to America and seeing it in a cinema packed with crazy Americans that yell stuff at the screen and clap at different moments. So I just cannot wait. I'm geeking out already, and it's so far away. It's awesome.
That's cool.
And we'll have to get you to do a report back from that. Okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think if anyone goes to America, you have to go to the movies, because it's a completely different experience to Australia. the applause, people clapping, people yelling stuff out.
The drinks are bigger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, and you can put all kinds of different crazy stuff in your popcorn. It's awesome.
Oh, look, you can get more popcorn. You can get pretzels and all sorts of stuff at the cinema. It's fantastic. Oh. And hot dogs at the cinema.
Oh, no, this is revolving the podcast.
All right, let's move on to our pick of the week. What do you reckon?
Yes.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. This week we are talking about Kirkman's, I should give his whole name, shouldn't I? Robert Kirkman. I'm familiar with him now. I know him so well. I've been with him for 90-something issues. But anyway, Robert Kirkman's, I'm going to go so far as to say, masterpiece of drama,
yes.
The Walking Dead. This started several years ago and is this one long, continuous story. It is broken into story arcs, but there's no end to this. It's just it's a soap opera of comics is what you're going to describe this as. And yes, it is about the zombie apocalypse. In a nutshell, the story is about a group of survivors who are literally traveling to just find a place they can make home in a world that is turned upside down, where the dead have started to walk. What's interesting about it is, even though it's classified as a horror book, it's actually not very horrific in the sense of it being scary. It is quite gruesome in places. But it is actually more drama about the people. The zombies often take a back seat to what's going on to everything else in the story. Richard, this is your first time through.
It is. I was a Walking Dead virgin before this. I, you know, obviously I'd heard a lot about the book, I knew about the TV series, but was avoiding the latter, because I wanted to read the book first.
Fair.
And so, yeah, this is exactly what this show is all about. Finally getting around to those things that you meaning to read for a while. And look, you know, I'll just say up front, I'm loving it.
Cool. I'm glad to hear it.
And it's a really well told story. And I think, you know, it's no secret to those who obviously have been reading it for a while that the zombie apocalypse is a background element.
Mm.
And it really is about all those human interactions. And in fact, Robert Kirkman says that in his notes at the end of the first issue,
mm-hmm.
That he didn't want to make a horror story. He didn't want to make a gruesome bloodfest, although it is both of those things at various times. What he is making is a story about a group of characters, and God damn it, you get to like these characters very quickly. And
not just like them, you get to love these characters.
You do get to love these characters, and when they do, when some of them do go, or things do happen, or they are put in danger, you have a gut reaction to it, and I think that is an amazing achievement in a black and white comic book. You know, yeah, I mean, let's.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. Cameron, tell us about your love.
I love The Walking Dead. I mean, the thing that I love most about The Walking Dead is it's kind of like Lord of the Flies with zombies, really. It's kind of like this breakdown of society when this big world-scale event happens. And, yeah, the zombies do take a back seat, but I just love it, even down to the fact that, you know, it's in black and white. The world they inhabit is black and white, you know, like all the rules are gone, society's broken down, and how do you live, and, you know, they're little microcosms that pop up in this community of people and the politics, and just so many different themes pop up in the book. There's, you know, down to, you know, just relationships, marriage, race, you know, like everything, you know, what it is to kill a zombie versus killing another person, because the underlying thing of The Walking Dead is that, you know, the people end up being worse than the zombies. And it's kind of that critique on human nature. And, you know, once you take away, like, you know, governments and all this kind of gear and we're left to our own devices, what would actually happen? And, you know, that animal instinct comes out, and you certainly see it in the comic book. And that's the most fascinating thing about the writing and the way things happen in the book, is that, you know, these characters, the things they do, you know, sometimes they always say in the book, I did it for the good of the group. I did it for the good of the group. But then you kind of go, oh, you know, are you going a bit crazy? You know, like, is the, you know, the animal side in you coming out a little bit? But I have to say, the thing I love the most about The Walking Dead is it's one of those scream out loud comic books. When you're reading it, you turn pages and literally go, holy crap. Like, things happen and you just, you can't do anything but vocalize it, because it's amazing. And you have to give the writers credit for actually having the balls to kill off characters quite regularly in the book. You know, most comic book series, you know, unless you're Marvel, killing off the Phoenix every now and then. you have to give them credit. They kill off characters and they're not afraid to take swipes at main characters. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about the TV show a little bit, but that's the biggest difference between the comic and the television show, is in the television show, that does not happen. They don't have the balls that the comic does. And I think that's just the difference between writing a comic and making a TV show. You know, you can't cast actors and say you're doing two episodes, you know, because they'll probably go, no deal.
It's actually one of the biggest problems I have with the TV series. Yeah. Is in particular, I think it's no, I mean, we'll just say this up front right now, that of course we are completely spoiler ridden. That's what we do on this show. We talk about things in depth, and let's just say that we will talk about it in the comic book, but the end resultant of Shane, one of the main characters, this doesn't happen in the TV show. And it is actually a glaring mistake in the TV show. And we'll discuss why in the comic book, because it is actually an incredible emotional high point in those first 8 issues. Not high point as in it's a nice thing, but it's high point as in it's one of the highest emotional moments in those first 8 issues, where you sit there and go, oh my God, I can't believe we just saw that. And you're right, there are moments like that all the way through this series. And now Richard's only really getting into this now. I'm sure, Cameron, you're like me, you're probably up to issue 91 or whatever it is we're up to now. And some of the events that come later have literally made me put the comic book down and say, I can't go any further right now.
Yeah.
You know, and there are moments that are just truly shocking. And you just go, I can't believe they went there, and applaud them for doing it. But my God, it's hard to read sometimes, you know, because as we said, you love these characters, you get to know them. And the thing about this comic book is it's about the randomness and how anything can go. Anything can happen in this. And I love
that. I think you're dead right. Like, it's the world they live in this book, with the zombies ever present. I mean, the zombies create an unpredictable world that they live in, because at any moment, you know, the zombies can interrupt like their peace. So they're always rolling the dice, these characters. And sometimes, you know, you're going to win, and then a lot of the times you're going to lose. And yeah, there's been so many jaw-dropping moments in the comics. And it's not just, you know, zombies munching on characters, you know, it's the characters themselves and what they do to each other that is more shocking than anything the zombies do throughout the series. Mm. And it really makes you think. And I think I think I was thinking about it the other day, I don't think you don't know how far into The Walking Dead you are until you start dreaming in black and white and having nightmares in black and white. Because it happens. You might read a bit before bed and something really horrific happens and you're just in shock and you have to stop reading it, and then you go to sleep. And it's hello, black and white nightmares. You're like, damn it, fucking dead.
Richard, why don't you give us a rundown of the 8-issue arc?
Right. Well, look, I'll talk a little bit about what it reminds me of in a minute. But the comic wastes no time in throwing us into the deep end with with a gun with the main character is put into a coma,
mm-hmm.
And wakes up very similar to the film 28 Days Later. Wakes up to find that there's been a zombie apocalypse. And so he goes off searching for his wife and child, who apparently took refuge in a major city. He gets there to find that major cities are even worse. They're overrun by zombies of all creatures. He doesn't know exactly what they are at this point. I don't think anyone even refers to them as zombies at this point. They just know that the dead are walking and chewing on things. And, you know, he eventually gets up to this little settlement just outside of a major city. As luck would have it, he finds his wife and child there, and he gets on with business. This little community gets on with the business of surviving, and that pretty much occupies the rest of the first arc. It's them dealing with the fact that things may not go back to normal, and they might just have to get on with this. Might be their reality from now on.
Absolutely, and in that first 8-issue arc, we've got a couple of dramatic plot lines happening. Rick is basically looking for his wife and his son, which is kind of like the start of the whole thing. When he finds them, his best friend and deputy, at the time, because Rick is a cop, has basically been protecting him. And over the course of the 8 issues, we start to realize that him and Shane and Laurie, the wife, have had intimate relations, and they've been more than just a protector. And we have a very interesting moment with Shane basically losing it a little bit because of Rick's return. He finally got what he's always wanted, and then Rick coming back, even with all the craziness of the zombies, there's still that base human emotion of basically he feels cheated about what he should have had. It's like he almost had his little ready-made family, basically. Now, what I was saying before about this particular story arc, in the TV show, they wimped out, quite frankly. The Shane character in season 2 is still there. He didn't go through this sequence because this was an incredible moment, not so much because Shane, spoilers here, guys, Shane is killed, but it's who kills him. And this is a very important line that comes out of his mouth, and this is, of course, he's shot by Carl, which is the 12-year-old boy, son of Rick, and he says to his father, "It's not the same when you shoot the living ones," because he's and Rick actually says to him at that point, "It never should be," and it's a really important moment because they're becoming at that point, even in that first 8 issues, almost a little bit complacent about killing the dead. It's almost like they're just animals, just kill them. You know what I mean?
Well, and that comes up shortly after the 8 issues they come into, and this is jumping a little bit beyond that. I think it's around issue 10 or 11 they go to this farm. Where it's like, oh, we found this, and with the farm, they're keeping the dead in a barn. And the guy who owns it is like, you've been killing them? What do you mean you've been killing? We don't even know what's wrong with them yet. How can you just go around killing them?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really good point. Like, in, you know, they still don't really know what's going on, but they've gotten used to the idea of killing very, very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, as Cameron said, society has broken down very, very quick, very swiftly. And Rick spends a great deal of time in the first, I think probably 4 issues in particular, mulling over the fact that the rules don't apply anymore. It's a very different world we're living in, and they have to adapt to the fact that the rules don't apply. And it's a different set of rules that we have to live by. And I think it's really interesting seeing these characters grow through this and basically going, that's what we used to do. There's a great scene actually early on where the girls go to do the laundry down by the river. And they're saying, why are we doing the laundry? And it's like, you know, we've moved on from this now, haven't we? And one of them actually makes a comment, when this is all over, do you think we'll still be allowed to vote?
Yeah.
Something's really interesting about The Walking Dead, too, is the role that the children play in the story. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what they've done with the TV show as it goes on, because, I mean, a lot of the children that are in the comic book are missing from the TV show. They've scaled it down a little bit. But some of the, like, I mean, obviously Carl shooting, you know, killing someone is huge. You know, you kind of, you know, you think with the TV show, no television network boss wants to have, you know, a kid shooting someone on television.
And yet,
you
could
know,
you imagine like, how awesome that moment would have been?
Yeah, it would have just and you know, especially, I mean, Frank Darabont, you know, is the guy behind the Walking Dead television series, you know, getting to screen, and there's some dramas behind the scenes with him pulling out of the show now, but very early on, he's the kind of director, you know, if you've seen some of his films, particularly The Mist, he's not afraid to go dark, and wow. And yeah, it feels like a real missed opportunity, but some of the, there's some imagery as you get further on down in The Walking Dead involving the children, I mean, they're growing up with all this happening around them, and there's these images of, like, you know, what do you live for, and how do you learn what's right and wrong when around you there's so much death and destruction, and you know, the human characters, some of them are absolutely, some of their actions are absolutely horrific as the series goes on, and it's just it just gets you thinking, which is just why I love the comic book so much, because it's got balls, you know.
Absolutely. And just to jump ahead just a little bit, and sorry, Richard, because this is slightly spoilerish, and you're not there yet, because it's actually quite far ahead. You're probably looking issue 50 or so.
I'll forget it by the time.
Maybe you will. But you're absolutely right about the kids and how how this is affecting the children. There, if you remember, there's that sequence where those two children actually start going off and killing animals because they're fascinated by the idea of death now. And so they're sneaking off during the day and killing small animals and stuff. And it gets to this point where they all start getting paranoid because they're saying these kids are so desensitized now, they actually start to worry that these kids might kill them in their sleep because they're worried that these children are too far gone. They're broken now. You know what I mean? And the resolution to that, which I won't spoil for Richard here, is terrifying. I mean, it's horrible, you know? But that's the sort of directions that Kirkman takes this. And I love the fact that he's willing to just go with it no matter where it takes him. And he's not afraid at any time. The series is afraid. And just to correct you a little bit, Darabont didn't walk. He was fired.
Yeah, that's right.
He was fired after, I think it was about after episode 2 of season 2. He apparently had been having conflicts with AMC, and they had dumped him. Look, the problem that I have is the pace of the series. I mean, as you've seen from this first 8 books, Richard, it moves swiftly. You know what I mean? They're always on the move. There's always something happening. And you've read ahead, I think it's issue 10 or at least issue 11, where they've come to that farm.
Yeah.
They come to that farm at the first episode of season 2 of the series. We're now up to episode 6. I've watched up to episode 4, and they've only just discovered the zombies in the barn.
Oh, wow, because that's like 4 pages in or something.
I know, and that's 4-hour-long episodes of dragging their feet. And you sit there going, how long can we drag this on? I am bored. Move on, you know?
Given that they've got 80 issues to play with.
I know, and look, by my calculations, you're not up there yet, Richard, but I'm just looking at the comics right now and saying by about issue 21, they should be well and truly, and this is kind of spoilerish, but I won't tell you the punchline, but they should well and truly be up to the prison. Cameron knows what I'm talking about.
And that's where, for me, that's where it really comes to life. Like, all the stuff, like, I'm kind of jealous of Richard because, you know, there's so many times where you want to erase your memories of reading it and go back and read it again because all the beginning stuff is just all really great character development stuff. When they get to the prison, it is amazing what happens and what they do with that location and how they use the prison and the social commentary that's going on there and just how kick-ass it is, some of the stuff that happens and then some of the horrific stuff.
Great character Tyrese and his family is. And Tyrese and his family are like major players in the entire series and they're not even in the TV show.
Yeah, well, something I'd be interested to ask you guys about this. It seems with The Walking Dead, with the TV series, it seems like there's just not any faith in the content in regards to, you know, the seasons. It's going season by season, and the way that the American television system works is that, you know, I don't think they know that they're guaranteed to go beyond 4 or 5. So I think they're just playing it really, really safe, whereas I think they should have gone the opposite tack, moved forward really swiftly and just engaged the audience and just smash through the seasons, you know, because they don't know if it's going to get canceled or not.
I'm right there with you. I agree with you 100%. Look, they have so much material to work with. They could have, I mean, we could well and truly be into the prison by now. In fact, I thought season 2 would be about the prison because it's such a major event, and yet we're just dragging our feet. It's just unbelievable.
I think the bottom line is get into the comic first and then watch the TV show second. That's the best
comic
advice.
The comic is the canon. Read it. This is where the real drama is. Richard, you're going
to
say?
I was going to say, just to give listeners an idea of how different the show is, I believe you've got a clip there, David.
I do. Let me play this for you. Here we go.
I'm walking down the street. Are you okay, Mom? No! I, too, have been bitten in the back. Now, where even the cat's like, meow, meow.
Oh, no, it's a plague of bad acting.
Yeah, no, oh. No, no. Chris is not bad. He just extends.
All right, Richard, tell us
that
about
was, sorry, that was the Walking Dead.
So, Richard, tell us about this clip.
That clip was from Australia's Triple J. Tom and Alex are interviewing the one and only Robin Williams the other morning. And that's a bit he's been doing on virtually every interview he's done this tour.
That's fantastic.
I heard that this week. I woke up to it on, I think, Wednesday morning or something. I thought, oh, we have to include that in the show.
Absolutely. No, that's fantastic. All right, so Richard, what were the highlights for the first 8 issues for you?
Look, you know, this reminded me a lot. I don't know if you remember a TV show from the 70s in the UK called Survivors. I don't know if you ever saw this. It was a Terry Nation show, the guy who invented the Daleks on Doctor Who.
Yep, and Blake Seven. Let's not forget Blake Seven.
And Blake Seven, yeah. And he had a show called Survivors, which was very much just a – it was about – there was been an apocalypse of some kind, and it was very much a procedural about – these people just getting on with their lives, and there was no race to find the cure. There was no, you know, miracle moments or anything. It was just them working out what they needed to do to get by from week to week. And this was revolutionary on Pepper Television in the 70s. Mm. And for me, this is the same thing for comics. It's this very, as you said, it's a very swift story, but it's also a very soap opera kind of thing. And that in itself is quite revolutionary for comics. The idea of people just getting by from week to week. There's no capes. There's no giant invasion happening. There's nothing.
No.
There's no major crossover with another event to kind of force you to buy, you know, Walking Dead spin-off comics.
Well, there actually is just a little bit. I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler coming up around the issue 20 something mark. I can't remember exactly which issue it is. A lot of people, if you read the letters column, actually talk about the fact, why doesn't he do it in color? Mm. And as a joke, it was actually quite funny because I was reading it and they don't even give you kind of a heads up. You get the end of the issue and you turn the page and suddenly Rick wakes up and it's in color and it's this bright, vivid color. And it's basically done in the style of Invincible, which is his superhero comic book. And they're out there fighting the zombies and they're all in superhero costumes and all this stuff. And basically at the end of it, he goes, this is why we don't do it in color. And it's like the whole thing is just a bit of a joke and a con for the readers. But I just thought that was so fun to do it that way. But yeah, sorry.
And that's it. I mean, that's what I love about it. To me, that's the highlight of the show. The highlight of the book is that it's not... it isn't particularly trying to wow you at all, and when it does, it's to bring home a brutal point, like, you know, kids and violence, as we've already discussed, or the way that humans can suddenly turn, and the way that society can suddenly break down. It's a slow build on that level, but the rapid pacing of it keeps you engaged. But there's these really deeper issues that are slowly building up, and I think that's really hard to quantify, but it is definitely the highlight of the book for me, that it's a thinking man's comic.
Mm, absolutely. I think Image has done an amazing job producing this series and allowing Kirkman just this freedom to go with it.
Can I just say one other thing too? We haven't really mentioned it, is the artwork.
Yeah.
Tony Moore did the artwork for the first 6, and then it was taken over by Charlie Adlard, who has stayed on the book. But in both cases, the artwork is so detailed, so amazing. It suits the comic perfectly.
Yeah, I actually think I prefer the second artist. I think I prefer the artist who took over.
You could notice the difference immediately between 6 and 7.
Yeah, you can. It's a very different style. I think it's because I've been reading it so long, I'm very used to the second artist. And going back and reading the first 6 issues again, it was actually interesting going back and going, wow, it actually has come a long way. It's like, kind of like going back and watching really early episodes of The Simpsons, And you go, they've changed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but yeah, no, it's, I've always loved the art style of it. I've always loved that stark black and white. I think that stark black and white is really important because some of the scenes are incredibly gruesome. And because it's in black and white, it also makes it more palatable.
Exactly.
And you're not focusing on the fact that, yes, somebody just had their throat ripped out, because even though it's there on page, you're not, it's not being beaten over your head because there's splashes of red all over the page, you know? And I think that was a very smart move early on.
And it becomes even grittier and more realistic under Charlie Adlard, because under Tony Moore, who I do love Tony Moore's art style, actually. I've enjoyed his stuff on other books as well. This is the guy who did Battle Pope, amongst other things.
I haven't read that.
Which is a great book. I think I've read that years ago. If you haven't checked it out, check that one out. His was a little bit more cartoony.
Right.
Just a tiny bit more cartoony, I found, in the first six issues. And just the expressions on people, that kind of really big wide-eyed thing where it gets a lot darker and grittier in, under Charlie Adlard. And yeah. I think that's what the book really needs. It needs that kind of shot of reality.
In the first six issues, whenever Rick would actually start to get emotional, he was always drawn as incredibly angry.
Yeah.
And it's like he's having this talk about, you know, this impassioned talk about how the world has changed. And the expression on his face is almost like he's going to hit the guy. And he's thinking, not quite the right expression for the...
So when he does have a mini snap at one point in those first eight issues, it's kind of like, oh, I thought he'd been angry this whole time.
Yeah. Can we talk about the cliffhanger at the end of issue eight?
Yes. Well, that leads to, they've just found the gated community.
And they think they've found this place that they might be able to actually turn into a home because it's got a gate around it and it looks deserted. And I always love that reveal. Because of the snow, it slows the zombies down because they don't really have a respiratory system, and so they basically freeze. And when it thaws out, they start to move again, and it's all very, very cold at this point. And I love the fact that they go to this thing, and they're all very happy, and yes, they come in to cross a couple zombies they clean out, but then they have this lovely night's sleep, and they go, we're going to start cleaning out this town. Rick goes out to get some tools from the RV that they've been driving around in, and turns around, and because the snow has started to melt, the sign on the gate that they didn't see the night before is the last panel of the eighth issue. It just says, all dead, do not enter. <You know? laughs> I remember when I read it through the first time, I went, oh, man. It's such a great last panel to finish off that arc. And the series has got lots of great last panels like that, where you sit there and go, you just know that's the end of a trade.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's immediately why I went on to issue 9 as soon as I finished reading that. So it's like, I'll leave it there.
And you'll find that happens all the way through The Walking Dead, because even though it's dense, even though there's so much happening, even though there are going to be times where you're going to put it down, let me tell you, when you meet the governor, you'll know what I'm talking about. That's an intense sequence, let me tell you. We're just giving you a heads up, man. What you're going to find is that you're going to, because it's a continuous story, they move through so quickly, you're going to get to the end of one and you'll turn the page and you're on the letters page. They don't even say continue. They don't say the end. It just ends. And you go, next one. And you just have to keep reading, you know. You can polish off 10 issues without even thinking about it.
Yeah. It is a fast read, I'll give you that. And I think out of all the ones we've done so far, I think I read my reading assignment in you know, an afternoon.
Mm.
And then had I had more time this week, I may have been up to issue 80. It is that it is that kind of read. And I think that increasingly, I'll be picking this up, and I'll certainly be reading more of this over the break. I want to find out. That's the difference between this book and other books I've read lately, is that I want to read the next chapter. I want to know what happens. As we said right from the very start, it's because I care about the characters. I like spending time with them.
Yeah, and that's actually, once again, we keep beating on it, but it's another problem with the TV series, is the guy who plays Rick, Lincoln, what's his name, something? Lincoln something? Anyway, the British actor who's actually playing Rick, I just don't care about him that much. Whereas the Rick in the comic book, he is our Rick. He's the person who is leading us through this. And we care about him greatly, and we care about his kid, and we care about his wife, and we care about everything that's going on. And so when events take place around him that are tragic, you sit there and go, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Mm. All the way through. You're going to say, oh, my
Andrew
God.
Andrew Lincoln, by the way.
Andrew Lincoln, thank you. We're going to be saying, oh, my, you're going to be saying, oh, my God, a lot over the next 89 issues or whatever it is.
Mm.
I was actually talking to a friend of mine who is also a huge Walking Dead fan, and there is an event that takes place in, once again, the last panel of one of the much later books. It's in like 80, 81. It's involving Carl. Cam probably knows what I'm talking about. And I basically said, I just stopped at that point and said, no, that's it. I need to take a break. This is too much. You know what I mean? And it really made me take pause because it's like, wow, after that many issues of knowing these people, it's just hard to watch sometimes, you know, and it's hard where Kirkman takes it. And, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's I think the difference between a series and a book like this is even though the characters are drawn and they're standing there in front of you, because it's a written format, you give them your own voice.
Definitely.
You know, in your mind, you have got the way, the swagger that Rick speaks with. You know, you've got you've got the passion in somebody else's voice. You might side with a minor character that they don't have time to explore in the TV series. You know, all those things come into play with a comic book. With the series, any TV series, any film for that matter, no matter how hard they try, no matter how hard good it is, they're still giving it to you. They're still giving it to you on a platter. This is Rick. You know, this is what's happening this episode. You know, and you don't have that room for you know, that really powerful storytelling tool, your own imagination. And I think that's a really important element to this particular soap opera, that it is really hard. And you know what? As much as I love the last crop of superhero films that have come out, comic books are in that format for a reason. And I think that you know, there is something pure about a comic book, and this is a great example of that, of what you can do with just those, you know, with inks and pencils and a couple of words on a page. You know,
it's pure storytelling.
And
it's
absolutely,
and it's wonderful. Cam, let's wrap this puppy up. I'm going to assume that I can speak for you, but tell us your final opinions of Walking Dead.
Look, I honestly think it's one of those comics for people that just need a refresh palette. If you like a little bit over the superheroes, or, you know, like we were talking before, too many crossovers, too many events, too many characters dying and coming back to life constantly. The Walking Dead kind of refreshes your palette and reminds you what's great, like Richard said, where you just break it down, you know, pencils, ink, black and white, words on a page, and really, really well-written dialogue between characters, beautifully fleshed out characters. I think if you love comics and you're kind of a bit on the edge with some of the stuff you've been reading lately, grab The Walking Dead and you'll fall in love with comics all over again, and, you know, discover this whole new, you know, genre of comic which has kind of popped up, this, you know, survival horror genre of comic which is quite common now. You know, you go into comic book stores and there's so many kind of horror books on the shelves. You know, I'd like to kind of trace that back to The Walking Dead and see like how much it kind of, you know, launched those kind of books and how many followed. But it's just a wonderful comic to read. It is edgy, so, you know, like you know, if you don't like, you know, being challenged, it really will challenge you. But, you know, all I can say to people is read the comic first, watch the TV show second, and I think you'll have a really great time with it.
Fair enough. Richard, sum it up for us.
Look, loved it. Am loving it. We'll keep loving it for a while to come.
Fantastic. I'm just going to say that I'm not a huge fan of horror comic books. I've got a few of them. I've read a few of them. And generally, overall, I kind of go, they're a little bit silly. And The Walking Dead completely turned me around. And because I think at its core, it is a drama with horrific elements. And if you have always turned away from The Walking Dead because you thought it was just another horror book, take another look. Because it is actually, it is, look, we could go so far as to say that the closest relation in media to The Walking Dead is not the TV series, but would be the series Lost. In the sense that it's a continuous ongoing story of wondering what's going to happen to these people that you come to care about, even though sometimes the situations you kind of look at and go, really? But, you know, at other times you sit and go, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. There's some great characters coming up for you, Richard. All I'm going to say is I love Michonne. I think she is awesome, and she's coming up to you real soon, actually. I think it's issue 18 or 19, and she'll be one of your favorite characters for the rest of the books.
Richard, just to get you excited, two words, samurai sword. That's all you need to know.
you have done that now.
I don't know. No, samurai sword and zombies on leashes.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
She's awesome. She's a great character. So, look, I'm going to say this is highly recommended reading. If you are at all into comics, or if you're not into comics and wondering where to kind of have a leap in, this could be your book. This could be the way you can kind of, you know, cut your teeth on it, because you can look at it and go, it is a serious medium. Mm. It isn't just people in capes and superpowers. There is real stories about real people to have a look at, and it really is great stuff.
In fact, that's why we looked at it this week. We got a bit sick of the capes ourselves.
A little bit, yeah. And we're going to kind of touch on capes a bit next week, but not directly. It's an interesting series and something I've never read, but I've heard a lot about, and so I'm really looking forward to it. So
why don't you tell them what it is, then?
Next week we're doing Powers. Now, Powers is, from my understanding, is basically a detective book, but the crime that they're actually investigating is the death of a superhero. And so they're trying to figure out how and why this happened. And it's been raved about to me, so I'm really looking forward to having a read. We're reading
and
Volume 1.
And who's written that one, David?
I don't know. Who did? Michael Bendis?
Brian Michael Bendis.
All right! the man! so yeah, we're gonna have a look at Volume 1, which I think is an 8-issue arc, is it?
I think it is.
Eight issue arc in Volume 1. And if we like it, we might even push on and see how we go with that. I do want to revisit Walking Dead in a couple of months when Richard is all caught up, and we'll talk about some of the deep and interesting stuff that has actually come on. Will you come back for that one, Cam?
I definitely will. It's been awesome fun, guys.
That's fantastic. All right, so reading assignment for this week is Powers. And I also just give everybody a heads up that the week after that, that's our Christmas show the week after, isn't it, Richard?
It should be.
Yeah. All right. So the week after that, we're going to give you a heads up and give you an advance on it, because you're going to have to try and dig this one up, because I haven't been able to find it in digital format, which means you're going to have to visit comic book stores. You're going to have to go out and actually find it in print. We're going to be doing, for Christmas, a brand new release. None of us have read it yet, and we're really looking forward to it, which is Batman Noel. And what was the description for Richard? I love your description.
Oh, I can't even remember how I described it last week, but it's basically a Dickens story.
Yeah,
and I think
it was Batman meets Scrooge or something like that, or Batman is the DC version of Scrooge or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's I thought I took the description from the cover, but it's not on the cover. But yeah, I think it's pretty much that Batman is the Scrooge of the DCU. It involves, as you said at the start of the show, it's from the writer and artist of Joker.
Yep.
And it's it looks brilliant.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this.
But it says Batman must come to terms with his past, present, and future as he battles villains from the campy 1960s to dark and brooding menaces of today.
Fantastic.
So it sounds like if you're a fan of Batman in all of his various forms, it's the ultimate mashup for you.
So we are returning to capes for Christmas, but this book just came out in November, and we thought we can't pass this up. Not for Christmas.
No. So, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
So there you go. Your next 2 weeks are lined up for you. Powers for next week, Volume 1, and Batman Noel for the Christmas weekend. Guys, it has been an absolute pleasure. Cam, it's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can find me, as always, at therealbits.com. That's RELBits.com, or on Twitter constantly, even now, at DVDBits.
And Cam, where can people find more about you?
You can find me at www.popcornjunkie.wordpress.com, and that's where you'll find all kinds of articles stolen directly from Richard's website.
Yep.
on Twitter, you can follow me at popcornjunkies. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And you can find out more about me by going to geekactually.com. My Twitter, my Facebook pages, and all that sort of stuff are all on a big follow me link right on the front page, and you can find out more. Now, we also just want to throw out a quick one to say that we need reviews for Behind the Panels on iTunes. So if you are an iTunes subscriber, please jump in and leave us a review. That will help us get put up on the features page. Little bit of news. We've been putting this show out across all three of our feeds, Film Actually, Geek Actually, and Behind the Panels. This week, we are going to drop it on Film Actually because Film Actually has enough going on there already. It will continue to go out on the Geek Actually feed for a few more weeks and, of course, its own. So if you are subscribing via Film Actually, please shoot over and subscribe to the Behind the Panels feed because you're going to suddenly find you have no more issues to listen to if you're only looking for it on Film Actually. It's going to disappear off that one. Secondly, if you need to leave us feedback at all, you can find you can email us on comics@geekactually.com. That is our official feedback line, or you can leave us a voicemail 0280113167. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the show, or in more in particular about the comics we talk about. So this week, if you want to drop us your feelings on Walking Dead, love to hear them. That's it. That's the show, guys. I think we're done. I think Spider-Man has words for us.
Time for a disappearing act, boys.
he always does.
He always has words for us. Guys, thank you very much. I'll talk to you next week. Bye now.
Talk to you then. Bye.